It's time for the Secrets of Staffing Success from Haley Marketing. Candid conversations with entrepreneurs and thought leaders in staffing and recruiting.
How do you guys differentiate yourselves from your competitors? Is ACA a threat or an opportunity for the staffing industry? How can the staffing industry improve the candidate experience? What will be keeping you up at night over the next 2 years?
And here's your host, Todd Lewandowski.
Welcome to another edition of Secrets of Staffing Success. We've got a great show coming up for you today. And I want to take a minute just to thank everybody who took part in our listener Q&A, two-parter with our very own Brad Smith. Thank you to everybody who sent in questions. I hope you guys got something out of it. I know I did. I learned a few things myself just from listening in on that episode. Of course, you can always find this show on all of the usual places: iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify. And all of our episodes are also at HaleyMarketing.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at Staffing Podcast. We put all the brand new episodes up there, as well as some good marketing advice for the staffing industry. Our guest this week on Secrets of Staffing Success is the president and founder of Bullseye Recruiting. He's Will Thompson. Will, thanks so much for joining us this week.
Glad to be here, Todd. Thanks for having me.
Well, we like to have our guests kind of give a quick 60-second elevator pitch for their business. So tell us all about Bullseye Recruiting.
Sure. We are a boutique sales recruiting agency. We're based in Austin, Texas. We primarily focus on finding senior-level sales talent. It could be a VP sales, inside sales, or even individual contributors throughout the United States that focus on sales. We also do marketing and HR services for organizations as well. But we strive on finding the best talent available in a tough market and hitting the bullseye.
I like that. So, and how did you yourself get started in the recruiting industry?
You know, it's a funny story. I don't think anybody plans on saying, hey, I'm going to be a recruiter when I grow up. My daughter has said since she was seven that she wants to be a veterinarian, but, that's not how it happened for me. I'm from Austin. I went to college at Ole Miss and somehow became the rush chairman of our fraternity. And when I graduated, I didn't know what I was going to do. I spent some time in Europe, and a friend of mine reached out to me and said, hey, I'm in Memphis. I think I love my company. Why don't you go check it out? They have a branch in Austin. And I truly didn't know what they did. I just knew that everybody that was there was a cool guy, and it seemed like a great culture. So I joined Aerotech in 1995 and quickly became a recruiter and haven't left the industry since then. But yeah, that's how I got in. It was by happenstance. And, when I went to training, I didn't have any idea what I was doing. But I somehow stayed in the industry and love it.
And I know just the story behind how Bullseye Recruiting started is pretty interesting. You started this as a blog, really, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, it was in probably 2012, I started writing for recruiting blogs and Recruiting Daily and ERE, and all of the blog kind of got shared on social media, and it kind of went viral. And I started the Bullseye brand and had quite a list of followers from just writing. So that's how it started. And then I, from there, made it into a business. And I can go deeper into that if you'd like.
What I'm curious about is, how difficult was that decision to leave your job and basically, as a startup here and start your own company? What was that like those first couple months and years?
It was a scary feeling, and I'll kind of tell you how I did it. So I was writing for 3 or 4 years, and I got a phone call from a friend of mine, and he said, "Hey, listen, I'm moving my family from Houston to California. Can you help me with some recruiting?" And I said, "Sure." And he said, it is what you do, isn't it? And I said, yeah, but I'm a corporate recruiter at Rosetta Stone. And he said, well, you know, can you do this on the side? And I said, sure. So I developed a contract and called all my friends in the recruiting industry and said, how do I do this? And I started sourcing for him and for about 4 months, and nights and weekends did bullseye recruiting work. And then I had a full-time job at Rosetta Stone. And in March of 2015, I was part of a huge corporate layoff at Rosetta Stone, and the VP was released of an HR, and all the recruiters were released. And I was thinking, I looked at my wife and I said, what are we going to do? Within 24 hours, I had another job offer for a corporate recruiter. And she looked at me and said, Will, if you don't do this right now, then you're never going to do it. This is your opportunity to really become a business owner. And I think this is what you were called to do. So I said, okay, let's give it a shot. And it was terrifying. It was terrifying. My wife had had a job for 20 years as a labor and delivery supervisor, and she quit her job. So essentially both of us were unemployed in March of 2015, and we just started having success. People started coming to us, and that's how I got started. But we wouldn't have been able to have the success if we didn't have the blog and the following that we had, because people already knew the name and the brand. It was pretty easy to go from there.
What are some of your favorite war stories from those early days? You know, were those, I'm sure there was those moments when you said, oh crap, what have we done here? You know, do you have favorite anecdotes from those early days?
Yeah, I mean, it's scary sometimes when you're getting started and you don't have a ton of clients. And they're not being as responsive as you like. You're like, oh man, is this something that, is going to work or not? And then for some reason, it always seems to work out. But I remember many times sitting down and just going, oh gosh, am I going to be able to get another client, because this client's not going to be responsive, or we're not going to be able to hire someone into this role. But I think before you make a move and really decide to make that jump, have, you know, 3, 4, or 5 solid clients that you can count on before you do something like that. That would be my biggest suggestion. And we were able to do that. But there were times where I was like, are we going to be able to hit this? And I think that's a scary feeling. And if you're going to go into the recruiting industry, make sure you have that before you do that in owning your own business.
Well, as you know, everybody listening to this knows, candidates are very scarce right now. You know, there's more open jobs than there are available candidates. So how does your recruiting model change at times like this when there's not many available candidates? You know, how do you guys go after those passive candidates?
Yeah, so I mean, you're right. I mean, here in Austin, there are more people employed than there are jobs available. I mean, than there are people that unemployed people, which is crazy, right? So I mean, we're gonna have to get creative on how we're gonna recruit in this environment. I think that you know, recent graduates with no experience, we're going after. You know, I think the key here is being a really good salesperson. I mean, that's the bottom line. I mean, this is not a transactional business. You know, we have to understand the market is tight and have all our ammo that will help differentiate it, you know, your client from other companies out there. So when you're selling a candidate, you have to be able to know, you know, about the money, the benefits, do they offer remote work? I mean, bonuses, the culture. You have to have all your ducks lined up, and you really have to speak to the candidate in their language and understand what they want. But not going in there and trying to just sell a job, but getting to know them as a person and what they want, and then it's a lot easier to sell those things.
And how do you, what, you know, what's the best way, you know, other than obviously more money, but to convince somebody to make that leap right now, to convince those passive candidates that might have a really great, comfortable job right now that, hey, you know, maybe it's time to take another opportunity? Have you been finding passive candidates are willing to make that jump right now, or are they looking to stay put as well?
A lot of people are jumping. If you look at LinkedIn profiles, you'll see people have been with companies 1 to 2 months or 3 months, and it's happening because there are other opportunities out there. But the answer to your question is there's not a specific answer. You know, there's every candidate is different in how you attract them. But I think the key is to really understand and put on your consultative hat what they want. What is it that they want? Before, like I said, before you go in and sell a job, you've got to figure out, okay, if this guy's happy at where he is and everything's perfect, what would the ideal perfect job look like? And if you have it, then that's great. If you're not, then it may not happen. Because there's a lot of opportunities out there, and I think candidates know that. They're not going to jump ship to jump ship. They want to jump ship to make something different from what they want.
I'm wondering too, from the client side of things, from the businesses that are looking to hire, how much do you see their businesses changing right now? You mentioned all those nice little perks, but, you know, some of those old stodgy companies that, you know, believe it's a 9-to-5 job and you have to be there every day. Do you see those types of companies evolving and maybe saying, okay, you know, you can work from home 2 days a week, or different types of perks, different benefits coming through now in this type of market?
Yes and no. So I see some of the people that are winning this war for talent doing that, but I see a lot of people that aren't doing that, and they're getting killed. There's roles that are out there that are open for a long amount of time that people cannot fill because of that exact reason. They're not making changes to help, you know, recruit to get these right candidates on board. So I think it's a slippery slope. I mean, you want to make the changes, but you also have to stay within your budget. If you want to make the best hires, you're going to have to make some concessions. And I'm not seeing as many people or as many companies make those concessions as I would like, because I think it's so essential. And people will say it's not all about money, but it has a big piece to it, you know. And culture is a big piece, and work from home is a big piece, and I'm hearing it over and over and over.
In your role as a recruiter, can you say to those companies, hey, listen, I'm trying really hard here, but you guys might need to change up your business model a little bit here? You know, is that a conversation you can have with a company?
I have that conversation every day. I'm frank with people, and I tell people, and I tell clients all the time, I'm like, this is probably the hardest recruiting environment that we've been recruiting in years, and be prepared to be frustrated, and be prepared for candidates to leave. And you've probably heard the term, Todd, ghosting, but it's real. I mean, candidates just disappear. You have to tell them, you know, let's make some changes or you're not going to be able to hire. And I don't think there's any problem with telling your clients that. If you're afraid to do that, you're going to lose because you're not going to be able to track the candidates.
Right.
That's the bottom line. These candidates are not going to leave for a job that is a parallel move.
Yeah.
They want to move for something that is different. And, you know, that frank conversation is essential. And talking to them and saying, hey, you know, ghosting is real. You're going to get frustrated out there. You have to offer something different. This is what I'm seeing in the marketplace. But I really think what's going to differentiate recruiters in this market is, you know, being that consultant. And it's not just, you know, saying, hey, I agree with what you're saying. It's like, you know what? This is what I'm seeing in the market. This is what people are asking for. This is what we're running against. Do you have the flexibility? I mean, I can't tell you how many times this year I've had to tell hiring managers, look, if you want this candidate that you want, you're going to have to pay $30,000 more, or you're going to have to offer these benefits, or you're going to have to let them work from home because this is what people are asking for.
Right. How many what percentage of the clients that you have that conversation with are receptive to it? You know, what percentage actually do make that change?
See, this is an interesting part of the podcast, and I think they're my clients. The clients that I choose to take on will make those changes. And I think there's part of being a recruiter that if they don't make these changes, then it may not be a good client for you. You may have to say, no, I'm not going to do that. Because I have been in this business long enough to know it's okay to say no. If you're not willing to make these changes, then I'm not really going to be successful in finding. You're going to get frustrated, and this isn't going to work. So I would say that, the majority of my clients, 70, 80, 90% of these people, even 100% sometimes, will make these changes. And if they don't, then I may not take them on as a client.
What role has social media taken on in the recruiting industry now? 5 years ago, probably just dipping your toe in a little bit, but how much of it is part of your business now?
So it's evolutionized recruiting. I don't know how else to say it. I mean, it used to be a nice to have. Now it's a must have.
Right.
And I'll say this, and I don't know how many people on this call or listening to this podcast will agree, but 100% of my business comes from social media.
Wow.
So I don't do any prospecting or cold calling out the clients. All of my business comes from my social media presence, which started out with a blog, then became, a social media following, and then became the reputable brand. So that's how it happened for me. As a candidate, if you're not on social media, it's going to be very hard for people to find you. They're teaching young graduates to have LinkedIn profiles today. And I think that's essential because that's the first place people look. Mm-hmm. But it's just not LinkedIn. It's Facebook. It's Instagram. It's Twitter. I mean, your digital footprint is so important to your success in finding a good job. And also as a business owner, it's the white pages or the yellow pages of people finding you.
Yeah. And it's an interesting point you bring up about candidates. What can they do to help themselves stand out in this marketplace right now?
So first thing first, when they talk to a recruiter, I need for them to be prepared. If you get a call from a recruiter, I don't know how people answer the phone today, but if you do answer the phone, I would definitely say, do some research about the company before you actually talk to the recruiter. Have a good social media presence. I think that's key. I think that's you asked me about that, and I think it's just essential. I get frustrated with candidates that don't understand what they want to do with their career. There's so many people that are out there that are just like, you ask them what they want to do, and it's, I don't really know. Well, that's hard for a recruiter to place you into a role when you don't know what you want to do. I think they have to act interested. I see so many candidates that know that it's a candidate's marketplace that are don't act interested in the role or don't. And I think just as they want a job, the company wants them to want you as well. So I think it's so key for them to say, hey, I want you to know about the job, be prepared, but also say, hey, this is something I want to do. And also I think, being humble, right? I see a lot of candidates just being overconfident, and that really comes across the wrong way when you talk to recruiters. I think you should be confident in your skills as well. So if they ask you about something and you kind of say, "Well, I'm okay at it," or "I know a little bit about it," or and you're not really selling yourself, that's going to be hard to do. But I think it's so important to be confident, knowing exactly what you can do and articulating that to a recruiter.
Yeah. As you look at the recruiting industry overall, what does the industry need to do a better job of?
I think that recruiters need to, it's becoming more automated, right? But I think that artificial intelligence is definitely taking a key role in recruiting, and it's going to take away some of the sourcing that we have today. Finding candidates will be a lot easier to find. But I think that as a whole, recruiters need to put more of a consultative hat on. Rather than just selling a role, they really need to understand the people that are involved who are looking for a job and really help them find the job that they want. I think that's going to help, you know, with the image of recruiting quite a bit. And I think it's going to cut through a lot of the excess recruiters who really don't belong in recruiting in the first place.
Interesting. If you can take out your crystal ball here and look down the road, maybe 2-3 years, what's the outlook or what will the recruiting industry look like in 2-3 years?
So it depends on the economy. If the candidates continue to have the upper hand, I see us getting even more creative in trying to fill these roles, because there's just more roles than there are people. So I like I said, beginning, we're going to have to find people that we may have not looked at in the past. I see people switching jobs even more often than they are today, which is, I don't know what the average tenure is, but it's probably pretty short. I think that there could be a shakeup. If there is a recession, then this thing could turn back into what it was in 2008, and I just don't know where the economy is going to be. But if it continues on the track that we're on, there's going to be a lot of recruiters that succeed and a lot of companies that succeed, and there's going to be a lot that fail, just depending on how they do things. But artificial intelligence is going to play more and more and more of a role in our jobs, and I think it's just going to evolutionize, how we find people, how quickly we find people, and the winners will be the people that are, like I said, consultants and help really understand the needs and wants of the companies.
Yeah, absolutely. He's Will Thompson, president and founder of Bullseye Recruiting. You can check out more about Bullseye at bullseyerecruiting.net. Will, I can't thank you enough for all of your insight into the recruiting industry.
Oh, thanks so much.
Great stuff there from Will Thompson from Bullseye Recruiting. I really enjoyed what he said about going back to clients and telling them, hey, you need to offer more here. You know, we've talked to staffing firms that have upwards of 100 open job orders right now. It's a candidate's marketplace. We know that. We talk about it all the time. So what are you going to do to attract those passive candidates to that job? People don't make a horizontal move. They don't change jobs just for the sake of changing jobs right now. So you have to entice them. You have to give them something that's going to make them want to change jobs. And you can't be afraid to go to a company and say, hey, listen, it's a competitive market right now. There are just not any available candidates. What can we do here to sweeten the pot? Can we increase the yearly salary? Can we increase the hourly rate? Can we offer them some benefits? Can we, allow them to work from home a couple days a week? That's what it's coming down to now. And I wonder how many of us would be comfortable having that conversation and going to a client and saying, you're just not offering enough here. There are other companies that are offering more than you are. I was talking to a friend in HR and she was saying how they were having a really hard time filling this position. And I said, what are people looking for? What's the culture there at this company? And she said, well, it's kind of a, you know, an old school way of thinking that it's a 9-to-5 job and you got to be in the office every week. And she was saying that, you know, a lot of the people that she was interviewing wanted that flexibility. They wanted to work remotely a couple days a week. You know, younger people, they have kids, they, you know, they have to get them off the bus, stuff like that. They have to watch them during the day. That's the kind of things that companies need to start offering now in order to attract the best passive candidates they can. So, yeah, I think the lesson here is don't be afraid to go back to your clients and say, hey, we need to offer a little bit more here. I really like that mentality that Will had there and the fact that he wasn't afraid to have those conversations. All right, we got to run. Thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of Secrets of Staffing Success. As always, you can find us on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Google Play, on Spotify, anywhere where you find your favorite podcast. Just subscribe to us. Make sure that every one of our episodes gets delivered to your device. And while you're there, please leave us a review. Let us know what you think about the show, good, bad, or indifferent. And let us know if there's anybody that you'd like to see featured on an upcoming episode of Secrets of Staffing Success. We will talk to you next time. Thanks for listening.